Please be seated. So I want to talk this morning about both this gospel passage, this rather intense and somewhat disturbing passage of Mary anointing the feet of Jesus and then wiping them with her hair. And I also want to talk about what Paul might be saying in Philippians, where he says, you know, I had everything going for me, and there came a point in my life where I understood that the way I'd been thinking about myself really made no sense in terms of ultimate reality or in terms of God. So we'll get to that. But where I want to start is with one of Marcus Borg's ideas that seems, in a sense, not so surprising. He says, one of my core convictions, and this is near the end of the last book he wrote, he says, one of my core convictions is that God can be experienced. And again, that might seem like, well, sure, except when you reflect on it, I think we realize that we often live with ideas about God, or ideas about the world, or ideas about ourselves, but we don't often really experience them with much power, much intensity. And I want to try to describe, in terms of our lessons today, what it might be like to really experience the presence of God, and what kind of changes it might bring in our lives, and why we might be a little reluctant even to acknowledge. And as with so many things, I say we live with ideas about God, and yet we can experience, but those two things are related. And what I hope to put before us this morning are some of the ideas that you've been hearing me talk about now for quite a while, as like little seeds of meditations, seeds of awareness that you might carry with you as you walk through your days, sort of alerting your attention to something that might be so. And of course, what I am talking about is that central idea. The presence of God is actually and literally in all things. There is nothing created by God that does not share in God's presence. And so the whole world, all of reality, is a sacramental reality, the inward and spiritual dimension being often somewhat concealed beneath the outer visible dimension. But to affirm as an idea that we live in a sacramental universe in a way predisposes us, perhaps, to experience it as such. So this scene at the house of Lazarus, Martha and Mary, you have two characters that stand pretty starkly in opposition. You've got Mary, who is, again, I read this story as a man, as an Episcopalian, and as a Norwegian. And all of those things incline me to recoil slightly when I see this surrendered love of Mary pouring itself out. And the perfume, it's nard. The oil of the spikenard plant, common in the ancient world, very expensive, hard to translate valuations exactly from the ancient world to the modern. But they said it was about a year's wage for a laborer. So in our terms, many, many thousands of dollars represented in this perfume that Mary poured out over the feet of Jesus and then wiped them with her hair. And then you get the foil, Judas, standing by, being critical, saying, why was this money not used for something worthwhile? And the line, love to unloving eyes always seems extravagant. He didn't get it at all. And I do want to throw in, though, you know, every time we talk about Judas, and we'll be talking about him as we go through the stories of Holy Week, when we talk about Judas, I always want to remind us that we could be sitting right now, right here, in St. Judas Iscariot Episcopal Church. We could be doing that. There was nothing he did that cut him off from the love of God. He believed he had done something to cut himself off from the love of God. As many of us believe something has occurred in our life where we have done something that puts us in a place almost of exile. And Judas believed that, and so never, like Peter, rejoined the fellowship of the apostles and could reflect and say, oh, I was so lost. I was so lost, and then I was found. Like Peter. Peter betrayed Jesus. Peter was a scandal to the disciples, and yet he allowed himself to be broken, and he allowed himself to be changed, as Judas did not. And I had to look up the quote. I sort of remembered it. It was Oscar Wilde who said, recounting a conversation, a cynic, what is a cynic? A man who knows the price of everything and the value of nothing. And that would be pretty much Judas. He knew the price of the perfume, but he didn't know the value. He didn't know the value of Jesus. So you get Mary expressing profound love for Jesus in a way that, if we look at it, and especially if we look at it in terms of our contemporary world, might even feel a little creepy to us. This sort of huge power differential. The woman surrendered to her love, to this object of devotion. And, you know, I mean, I kind of grew up, you know, 70s, 80s, you know, when there were, you know, gurus, you know, in Rolls Royces, you know, with rose petals strewn along their way. And you have to suspect that some of these spiritual figures were in it at least partly for their own personal gain. And it was only the utter, profound selflessness of Jesus that made Mary's love perfectly safe and erased any hint whatsoever of exploitation from it. Jesus was not going to take advantage of Mary's vulnerability and her love of him. And so, I want to talk about Jesus in terms of the way he was able to make known the love of God, that Jesus, in his personhood, allowed God to flow through him and be made known. And to understand a little more about that, I want to back up and go to Paul, because Paul talks very interestingly about his own life. And he says, I might even read it, because lessons go by so quickly there. If anyone else has reason to be confident in the flesh, I have more. What he means by this is, confident in the flesh is, my resume was perfect. If I could be described on paper, nobody could surpass me. And he even, did you hear that he even counts among his virtues that he persecuted the church? I mean, that was an expression of his zeal. But when he talks about discovering that all of these, his resume didn't mean anything, what he discovered in that encounter with the risen Christ on the way to Damascus was, I think, what I've been trying to talk about these weeks and months. He said, the most important part of you is not that you're a Pharisee or a Jew or the tribe of Benjamin or none of that. It's what you share with other people. You know, it's Paul moving from what is the kingdom of mine, what belongs to me. I was a Pharisee, a tribe of Benjamin. All that's about me. To the kingdom of ours, to the kingdom that is shared among us. So that it's not that important. I mean, as Paul said, elsewhere, when you understand what it means to be in Christ, the differences on the surface become unimportant. And differences such as there's not, you know, male or female, Jew or Greek, slave or free, all of these things that seems like such profound markers for who we actually are, Paul says, all of that just fades into triviality. It doesn't matter. Because what matters is that every living person shares a connection with the Creator. And every creature, everything that is created, shares a living connection with the Creator. And wow, would our lives change if that became a palpable, experienced reality for us. And so what I'm trying to say is, let's hold the idea that that is true, that we actually live in a sacramental universe. Let's hold that we might be receptive to it when we hear that faint voice. And Paul also talks about Jesus in the same way. You know, when Jesus... It's a funny thing, the way the church has treated Jesus, and especially as an object of worship. And Mary, obviously, was devoted, raptly devoted to Jesus. But Jesus, throughout his life, always deflected attention away from her. He always said, if you welcome me, you're not really welcoming me. You're welcoming the one who sent me. You're welcoming God, whom you can see and experience in me. And one of the underlying truths of that is something that, again, we don't talk about very much, but has been a fairly prominent feature of Christian theology, which is that everything we love has its origin in God. In a sense, we love only one thing. And what we love are the unrecognized signs of God's presence. You know, when somebody speaks the truth or makes good art, or we love our children, or all of that comes of God. It all comes from the same source. And when you recognize that source, it becomes the most important thing in your life. And that's what, I mean, Mary, she is the living example of what Jesus spoke about in his parables as finding the pearl of great price. And Jesus, in his teaching, always was talking about the shift from that way of thinking about reality that has its reference in you. How can I arrange reality so that it will be more satisfying to me? And Jesus would say, if you keep pursuing that path, you're going to lose your real life. If you want to hang on to your resume, however good your resume is, but we're always like looking at our resume and checking it and seeing if we're better than at least a few people. If you want to hang on to your resume, you're going to miss the life that arises when you begin to understand yourselves as connected to each other, to creation, to God. And people experienced that in the presence of Jesus. And really, you know, depending on whether you were really committed to your resume, if you were really committed, you did not welcome Jesus. You got that he was going to put things on a completely different foundation. And so, you know, all the Pharisees and Judas and all these people saying, oh no, this guy means the end of us. Our gig comes to an end when people start realizing that we are actually all brothers and sisters. I don't want that. That's not an appealing reality to me. I want to be better than other people. So Jesus said, but if you make that shift, if you make the shift, and begin to understand yourself, not in terms of your unique characteristics, but in terms of what you share with others. He says, life will open for you. You will be blessed. You will be blessed beyond your imagining. And And that, I think, is what we see. We see that in Mary. It's an expression of love that, as a man, as an Episcopalian, as a Norwegian, it unnerves me a little bit. But I think it's closer to the truth. To taste, even slightly, the real presence of God, and then to begin to recognize it all around, is transformative, and it will bring forth, from our hearts unexpected depths. It will make us vulnerable, it will open us, it will change our lives. The dying that we have to go through in order to reach the other side of that life, it's just the giving up of our resume. It's just giving up the ways that we compare ourselves to other people. It's giving up the keeping of score. And it's saying, there is a different way. There is a different way. And that way is it, as Jesus promised. You know, if you're organizing your life around your self-interest, you're always going to be threatened. You're always going to be threatened. Thieves break in and steal. Moths rust. Moths eat and rust corrodes. The stuff that we can just cling to does not last. But the love and the sweetness, the perfume, the most delicious essence of life, the pearl of great price, that doesn't belong to us. We share in it. We participate in it. We receive it as a gift.